This is Mark McNeese, and you're listening to One Thing or Another, Interviews and Conversations. Welcome to another podcast. This is your host, Mark, and today I have the pleasure of talking with author Garrett Hudson. We were just speaking a little bit in the virtual green room. Garrett and his husband, and their many, many animals, live in Indianapolis, and I happen to be a Hoosier. I'm adopted, but I was raised in a little place called Elkhart, Indiana, so we were talking about that. Garrett, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Mark?
I'm very good. It's fun to talk to somebody from my home state, although I haven't been back since my dad passed away, and I don't think I will ever go back. I don't really have a reason to, but it was just fun talking to you about that stuff. I had mentioned where I grew up, Elkhart, remains the RV capital of the world, and you said you knew that.
I did, yeah.
When I was a kid, it was the band instrument capital of the world. I don't think it is anymore. But yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, Kahn Instruments were there.
I mean, I did not know that.
Selmer was there. Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of manufacturing many, many years ago. But you said that you've lived there all your life. Can you just tell people a little bit about yourself and your upbringing and the 411 on Garrett Hudson?
Yeah, sure. I'm 49 years old, which makes me Generation X. I am married. My husband is a veterinarian, and we are both animal lovers. We've got four dogs and two cats, so we've got a bit of a house full. We live in a 1922 bungalow. I love older houses and the character of them and all that. And this little bungalow is just perfect for us. It's in the midtown area of Indianapolis, a little section called Broad Ripple, which is kind of an artsy little area, and we like that. It fits us very well. Ironically, and this was completely unintentional, we live about four blocks away from the house where I lived when I was first born with my parents for the first couple of years of my life. That happened entirely by accident, but it's in the same neighborhood. And for that reason, when I decided to start my own publishing company, I named it Warfley Publishing after the Warfley neighborhood where I started life and have ended back up again. I also have a grown daughter. She no longer lives in Indiana. She now lives in Austin, Texas. She recently got married, so she and my son-in-law live down there, and we try to visit them a couple times a year if we can.
Now, just because people will be curious, is this a daughter from a previous marriage? Okay. All right.
Yeah, yeah. So I, before I came out of the closet, I had married a woman and we had a daughter. And then we divorced when I came out of the closet in 1997.
Okay, yeah. Just one of those things that people would, I would wonder about too, because I'm always curious. Yeah. By the way, I lived in Bloomington for a year, which is within driving distance of you.
That's where it is.
The university is there, so I went to Indianapolis a number of times. I understand it's quite different from it was from the late 70s when I was around there.
Yeah, it's a lot bigger now. There's no doubt about that, and a little more active. My parents always talk about way back when I was a kid, they said that Indianapolis rolled up its sidewalks at 5 o'clock, and that's not really the case anymore.
Very good. Indiana deserves a great city. Now, I want to tell listeners a little bit about your books. You write upmarket historical mysteries and spy fiction, driven by flawed characters who are moving and unforgettable. Mm-hmm. You write about ordinary people in different times and places who struggle with faith, family dysfunction, and all of the moral gray areas of life. You write realistic fiction, so your work is always diverse and LGBT inclusive.
Yeah, so I write what I call upmarket fiction, which is generally fiction that it's genre fiction, so it's not literary fiction per se. I write mysteries, for example, and historical spy stories, but they are focused on the characters a lot more than the intricacies of the plot. The plot really comes from the characters and the interaction of those characters. And the story is very much about how the characters grow and evolve and interact with their plot, which is why I call it upmarket fiction. And of course, I live in an in an LGBT circle. All my friends, for the most part, are LGBT as well. So naturally, I write stories that include LGBT characters. To me, it would be unnatural not to write stories about LGBT people. So every story I write has LGBT characters in it. Often the protagonist is LGBT as well, although I have one series in which the main character is a straight man, but there are plenty of LGBT characters around him as well.
Garrett, I know that you write historical fiction, and I'm curious to know what got you interested in historical fiction and how you went about choosing an era that you wanted to write about.
Sure. Yeah, I've always been interested in history. It was always my favorite subject in school. So I would read up on a lot of history, even beyond what we were just studying in class. And anytime I read about a particular place and time, I always imagine what it would have been like to live there. And since, you know, I always imagine stories set there, I start to think of people who lived there. I invent characters that would live there and things that would happen to them. So it just made sense for me when I would start writing to write stories that were set in the past. And I've always read a lot of historical fiction, probably starting around high school. And pretty much ever since then, I've read mostly historical fiction. So it always made sense for me to write historical fiction as well. Most of the books I've written have been set around the World War II era, which kind of happened by accident, I guess. My grandfather was in World War II, so I've always had a bit of an interest in that time period. But there's also a lot to explore in that period as far as complex characters and such. There was definitely a sense of good versus evil in World War II with the Nazis and all that. But at the same token, there was a lot of gray area as well. Good people did bad things. And I always like exploring that a little bit. It tends to make the characters very rich to me. So that's why I've written, I think, a lot of stories set in that time period.
I feel old now because you said your grandfather was in World War II. My father was in World War II. He fought in Germany. I'm a huge fan of historical fiction, too. I tend to like kings and courts, and Queen Elizabeth was always a favorite of mine, but interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to talk a little bit about some of your books. You've got five out. You've got five out. You've got one that is coming out October 25th, I believe.
Yes.
Gray Paris.
Mm-hmm.
I like the title. Where'd that come
from? Oh, thank you. So it's a little bit of a play on words there with Gay Paris, and most of the characters are LGBT. But also the gray symbolizes not only the gray weather in Paris, but also the gray uniforms of the German army that was occupying at the time. It does come out October 25th, so here in just a couple of weeks. It's available for pre-order now. The story is about an American musician named Oliver Carmichael who lives in Paris in 1940, which is when the Germans marched in. And the story unfolds over the course of the first year and a half of the German occupation, which was a period when the United States was still neutral in the war. So Americans had a little bit more freedom than their French friends had, which is reflected in Oliver's life as well. Most of his friends joined the resistance soon after the occupation, and an officer from the American embassy asks him to keep them apprised of what his friends' resistance activities are. And this evolves over the course of the story into a little bit deeper espionage work. And by the end of the story, Oliver has found himself in pretty deep danger. The inspiration for this came from reading a lot of spy stories that were at least partly set in occupied Paris and centered around the French resistance. But in those books, the characters were always straight, all of them. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, you know, I can do that, but I'm going to make it queer. So that's how I wrote this story.
And how do you do a lot of research?
If you're writing, I do. I have been to Paris, so I knew the city fairly well, but I had to do research on the way it was then in 1940 and 41, and do research specifically on the things that were happening then so that I conclude a lot of those historical details to make it feel real.
I know that you helped restore a chateau in France, I think, at one time.
I did, yeah. So I spent a semester in France when I was in college. I was not in Paris for that semester, although I visited Paris. We were in the south of France, And I was doing a course study through an association that would restore old medieval ruins. And one of the sites we worked on was a 12th century chateau. And we were rebuilding walls, rebuilding pathways. It was a lot of work with stone and old mortar. And it was really interesting, really fun work.
I wanted to ask you about a couple of programs that you have been involved in.
Sure.
One is the Association of Writers and Writing Programs.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, oh my God, I'm looking for the, did I miss it? Anyways, talk a little bit about that. Or is that something you're still involved in?
Not anymore, no. The first writers conference I ever went to in 2009 was the AWP conference in Chicago. It was huge and a little bit overwhelming, but it was very exciting at the same time. It had a really great energy about it, and I loved being around rooms full of writers. It was the first I'd ever experienced that, and I was kind of hooked on writers' conferences from then. So I belonged to AWP for a few years, but its focus was mostly on academic writing programs, things like MFAs.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I decided I wasn't going to pursue that option. So I let my membership in AWP lapse. But my other conference that I started going to around the same time was Midwest Writers Workshop. And it's fantastic. I can't say enough good things about Midwest Writers Workshop. It's hands down the best mid-sized writers conference in the country. And that's a hill I'll die on. It is without a doubt the best mid-sized conference in the country. It's really friendly. The attendees, the staff, everybody is just wonderful there. They're very helpful. They take the time to get to know everybody who's there. It's always about 300 to 350 people every year. And I've met some of my best writer friends there. It's one of those that I go back to every year without fail.
And when was it, or was it canceled, or what happened? Did the pandemic have an effect on it?
Oh, yeah. Like everything else, it was virtual this year. It's in July, and it's about an hour up the road from Indianapolis. It's in Muncie, and it's held at Ball State University, which is my alma mater. So that's another bonus for me, being able to go back there. But it's 3 days in July. This year it was virtual, and for 2021, who knows?
I remember when I was in high school, my big fantasy was to go to the Iowa Writers Caucus.
Oh, yeah. That is a very famous one.
Yes, but life had other plans for me.
It does that.
I'm not going to say sadly, but that's a long story. But I knew about them when I was in high school. And that's, I always wanted to be a writer. You began writing as a child, I believe.
I did, yeah. I always made up stories from very young on. And I started actually writing them down when I was in school and won a couple of awards when I was like fourth and fifth grade, a little blue ribbons. And, that always kind of encourages you to keep going. I had some encouraging teachers, for example. But then life got in the way, as it does. I got married, had a child, you get a full-time job, all these things come along, and then you have to kind of make yourself stay dedicated to it. It's not something that you can just let lapse. For me, when I wasn't writing those years, it felt like something was missing. So when I was in my early 30s, I started writing again, and it's like, yes, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be writing. And so I have ever since.
Well, it's nice to talk to somebody else who began writing so young, because I did also. I started writing short stories when I might have been 10 years old, not much more than that. And I have never stopped writing. It's changed. I wrote plays for 10 years. I wrote poetry for 10 years. And with poetry, I have told people, if you want to learn, if you wanted to develop a really good ear, read a lot of poetry. You learn to be concise and to say a lot with a few words. But anyways, I'm rambling on that. It's just nice, isn't it? Because so many people that I know, and I know a lot of writers also, but a lot of them will start writing later in life. It's like, I guess I think I want to be a writer. I want to write murder mysteries, whatever. But they'll start later in life. And I have been doing it over 50 years. I'm not saying I'm really good at it. I hope I am. But it's just been part of my life all my life.
Yeah.
And it still excites me when I sit down and I write a page in something, some story that I'm making up. It's there's nothing that compares to that. There just isn't, you know?
I agree. And in my 20s, I fell into that fallacy of, you know, I don't have time, you know, which is a lie we tell ourselves. You know, we're all busy with things, but you can make time for things that are important to you, even if it's just, you know, 15 minutes here and there. And that was something I didn't rediscover for myself until my 30s. And so I look back and I think, boy, I wasted all my 20s not writing anything. And there's, you know, a feeling of something being missing, like I said earlier, when you're not writing. And but I look back on it now and things happen the way they're supposed to. I think I started getting serious about it in my 30s, and I was at that point much better than I had been before, because I'd read a lot more good literature by then. I was more ready, I think, by the time I took it back up again.
Now that you bring up time management, I'll ask you a question about that, because I have,
sure.
I write in the mornings. I've been getting up usually by 5, if not sooner, in the morning, and I've been doing it for decades because I've always had a, quote, regular job. I'm going to be 62 this year, and I don't really tell myself anymore that I'm going to get rich writing what I write. I'm not. But I do it because I love it, and I've been doing it a long, long time. But I get up in the morning, and I hold a regular job, and that works for me. When do you, it sounds really disciplined, but it's really just getting up and doing the same thing every day. When do you write?
I write in the evenings. I'm not a morning person. I know a lot of writers write first thing in the morning. That would not work for me. Unfortunately, I can't get my brain going that well early in the morning. So I write in the evenings after work, and, I'll take about an hour usually in a typical day, because I've got a lot of other stuff going on, of course, too. You know, I have the day job like most people, and then we've got the dogs that I spend a lot of time with. And I want to spend time with my husband and everything. But I can usually spare about an hour, and I'll either spend that writing or revising or reading. And so depending on the time of year, I'm either reading something or I'm writing something or revising it.
Well, we're going to wrap up here. It's just been so nice talking to you, and you have a great voice. I don't know if you've ever
you've
thought of narrating. It's
no, I have not. Other people have suggested that.
People have it's something that I had toyed with, but I've tried it, even narrating like a chapter of my own writing. I've put out about 9 audiobooks, but I have not narrated any of them. I always hire a narrator. But because that's a huge learning curve. People think it's so simple. Oh, I'm just going to pick up a microphone and read my book. It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of stopping, and you make these little claps. So when you look at the audio, you see where it is. But you do have a great voice.
Thank you.
Short of the long, you have a great voice. And I'm really happy to have talked to you about everything and your books. And I think it's great that your book's coming out. I will get it. I would prefer to buy it because I like to support authors.
I appreciate that.
You know, I will always purchase a book, because like I said, I'm a really slow reader. It could take me a month to read a book. But anyways, Gary, it's been really nice to talk to you. And
it's been nice talking with you. Thank you.
On a rainy New Jersey day. So best of everything to you.
Thank you.
Maybe I'll get you back on again at some point.
Yeah, that would be great.
It would be fun.
Yeah.
And have a good day. Enjoy your life. And everybody. Oh, by the way, you've got to tell people where to find you and what to find, your URL and all of that stuff.
Yeah, you can look up my website. It's GarrettHutson.com, GarrettHutson.com. And that's got information about my books. You can sign up for my newsletter. Lots of good information there.
I did, by the way. I signed up for your newsletter.
I saw that. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Take care of yourself. It's been a delight, and I will let you know when this goes up, either later today or tomorrow. I'll send you the link.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome. Bye.